This is Punk News editor Ricky Frankel here bringing you another podcast interview. For this episode, I talked to DJ Bonebreak, drummer of the legendary Los Angeles punk band X. We talked about some tunes from the band's discography, the other legendary punk musicians he has worked with, and the connection X has to the show Children's Hospital. We also talked about punk rock bowling since X is playing it this year and since Punk News is a sponsor. I want to thank Adam White, John Gentile, and Op and Paul, as always, for the platform for doing these interviews. Thanks to Greg Simpson at Velour Underground Studios for producing all of our podcasts, my brother Andrew for helping me stitch these together, Melissa at Mad Ink PR for helping make this interview happen, and thanks to Brian Prietis of Pairs for the awesome theme song. Before we get started with this interview, let's listen to a classic song by X. Here is Your Phone's Off the Hook, But You're Not. Enjoy. I'm here with DJ Bonebreak of the legendary Los Angeles punk band X. DJ, how are you? And I also wanted to mention to you, it is refreshing interviewing someone with the same area code as me.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't notice the area code. So you're out here in the West Coast?
I am. And wow. Yeah, so this is extra special for me. So how are you doing?
Wow, we should have met for a beer or a coffee or something.
Yeah. Let's just get started, I guess. I got some questions about songs. I got some questions about some other things you've been working on, because you're pretty well accomplished. I read your bio. You are you've done a lot of stuff.
Well, over the years, I've done a lot of stuff. Yeah, from you know, symphonic stuff to jazz vibes to big band and salsa bands and polka bands and bluegrass bands. Basically, I've done a lot of things since I started playing. You know, and sometimes I need a gig, and I'm just versatile. I can't say I'm the best at any of those things, but I do have fun. You know,
cool. The song Johnny Hit and Run Pauline has a bunch of different genres, I would say, in it, from, you know, the Chuck Berry riff to the sort of gothy choruses. Was that kind of mixture of genres on purpose, or did that kind of happen naturally in the studio when you were writing it?
Well, I mean, it was before the studio. You know, obviously, Billy came up with the Chuck Berry lick, and yeah, it was a combo of, you know, our influences from, you know, growing up, and also someone pointed out that you know, we were talking about the Ramones, and I said, you know, that sounds like a Ramones song. So the Ramones had an influence on us, you know, more than other bands did, but I mean, a lot of other bands did, but you could hear a little bit of that. So yeah, you know, yeah, it was we were just tipping our hat to Chuck Berry, and you know, so I don't know, I don't even know what other influences they sometimes you don't even know what you're doing, you know. People right. ask me, oh, what influences came, you know, went into that song, and I go, I don't know, it was in 4/4, I decided to play in the 4 tom, you know. Sometimes it's a really specific thing, you're copying something, you know. Oh, we wouldn't do that. No, but you're copying something specific, you get an idea, or you just kind of, you go, at least on the drum set, you go, well, let's see, what options do I have? I can play the hi-hat, you know, I could play it closed or open, or I could play on the snare drum, I could play in the 4 tom or the ride, or just not play at all. So I had that many options. So does that answer it?
Yeah. Another song I wanted to ask you about is 4th of July, which has this sort of proto alt country sound to it. I was wondering, why did the band choose to go in the direction with that song?
Well, I mean, it was Dave Alvin's song.
Okay.
And Dave Alvin was playing the band when Billy quit the band in 1985. Dave filled in for a little while. And, you know, I don't know if you know that much about Dave Alvin or the Blasters. You know, he's a really prolific songwriter. And it's one of the songs he gave us. You know, it's like, okay, you can have this one. And also, you know, that was a really tough time. I mean, you know, to be played on the radio was almost impossible, you know? And so it was like, well, okay, we'll play, you know, and also, you know, John and Maxine were more into a little more country stuff. And it was like, well, let's try this, you know, it was organic, like, well, we're into this, let's try some different things. So, you know, I don't know what it sounds like, you know, Creedence Clearwater or something like that, but it's, you know, which isn't a bad thing. That's good. But you know, if there was a period when you couldn't, you know, if you had any punk sensibilities at all, you were lucky to be played on commercial radio. There were exceptions, but most of the time you were played on college radio stations. That's what sustained all of that whole scene, you know. It wouldn't have existed without that. And like I said, there are a few exceptions that bands would get played, or there'd be someone like Rodney Bingenheimer, who was famous in LA for playing whatever he wanted on a commercial station like K-Rock, but actually that station would come and go too. Some for a while they would play punk and they would stop and they would, you know, and so it was really, really a difficult time. You know, people didn't really accept anything that was close to punk. I mean, not totally, but until the early 90s, you know, Nirvana and Green Day and it was, you know, the new generation had to come and go, oh, this isn't this really subversive music that you can't, you know, play on the radio, you know, that's good. You know, I mean, the feeling people had about it, most people, you know, was like, you know, what are these communists or something? They're going to, you know, and, you know, Satanists are going to kill our children. You know, we'll have to put them in jail. You know, they've got to show, I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but there was that feeling like, what the hell is this? No one knew what it was, you know, for a long time. And it was like, you know, that's why it was underground for, you know, going into the, you know, late 70s and into the, like almost all of the 80s, you know. Like I said, there were exceptions and there were, you know, there was New Wave and, you know, some of that was good, some of it was terrible, but I mean, and bands like the Go-Go's who came out of the LA punk scene, you know, they were smart because they said, oh, no, we're not, we have nothing to do with punk. I know that they were more pop, but they came out of that scene. They were totally in the same scene we were in. And you know, that was a marketing decision, you know, just, you know, complete deniability. You know, what's it called? What do they say it in government? But anyway, yeah, they totally denied it, and that was a good thing for them. So, all right, I've talked too much.
No, it's this fascinating stuff. It's refreshing to hear a different take on that kind of stuff. So I love asking the veterans these kinds of questions, and I was wondering, back when the LA punk scene was sort of taking off in the underground, was there a show that X performed at, or a show that you just went to where you look back now and realize, like, wow, that was pretty legendary?
Well, you know, I don't know. There was the first show I played with X, mm-hmm. because it, which wasn't until 78, because I was in the Eyes before that, and I really didn't know John or X scene. I think I'd seen them around, but I didn't meet them until, you know, close to the end of 77. But the first show that we did, that they did with me was the Mask Benefit. And, you know, the Mask was a local club, and they were closing it down, and they had this at the Elks Lodge, and it was 2 days with a lot of, you know, almost every one of the local bands. And so in a way that's kind of legendary, and that's on, you know, I think Brendan Mullen put that out on different CDs, you know, put out a series. So in a way, something like that. But it's, you know, everything else is like, you can go, oh, wasn't that a funny show that night that so-and-so fell off the stage? You know, I don't think there was a eureka moment like, oh, wow. But you just had personal reasons, you know, like, oh, that was a great night. It was the night I got laid. That was the night that, you know, the cops, you know, I got away from the cops. but I would say, yeah, I would stick by that one because it was the moment when a lot of local bands played in a bigger place, you know, and we had a reason to do it, to save the Mask. So that one will do, unless I can think of something else. But there was another one. Oh, actually, there was one more that happened maybe a year later than that. It was at the Elks Lodge too, in a different part of it. It was in, you know, near downtown LA. And that was the one where the cops came in, and it was, you know, maybe five bands, you know, the X was headlining, and the Go-Go's and the Plugs and the Alley Cats. And we were playing this bigger show for us. And the cops came in and just tore it apart. They just came in swinging with their clubs because they didn't like us. You know, to this day, I don't know exactly. I've heard different reasons why they showed up. But and, you know, considering that there was no real action going on, I think people say there were undercover cops that were on the dance floor. They're going, what are these guys doing here? These guys don't belong here, you know? Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, I think someone said, oh, we're in imminent danger, or the people are, because they were slam dancing. And it was pre-planned, because there were tons of cops coming in and pushing people out of the hall. And there were troops of policemen at attention waiting, like, you know, riot troops, mm-hmm. you know. It wasn't like, we got a disturbance call, send a couple policemen. It was like, oh, the punk rocks are playing, and we have to, you know, bring 150 cops and a sniper and a helicopter.
You know, what?
and break this thing up. And in a way, I I'm not kidding. And it was a defining moment, because you know, I mean, I remember at the beginning of the show going, God, it's not that successful. It's not sold out. You know, it was a little bigger hall than we were used to playing. And I was like, well, yes, it's kind of boring. Yeah, there's no, you know, I don't know if it's going to be that good of a night. And then suddenly, you know, the cops made it a really important, you know, night. Like, okay, oh yeah, I guess we are important. I guess we are somebody. Yeah, the cops are afraid of us. They think we're, you know, going to take over the city. So I don't know. That's my take on that. I think that. And yeah, we never did play, you know. Yeah.
Wow.
I have the poster.
that is quite the story. I gotta know this. How did the band end up on the show Children's Hospital?
Well, that I don't know exactly. I think either the director or a couple of the actors or one of the actors, I can't remember exactly who thought it'd be a good idea, but they just wrote this story around, you know, the idea that one of the surgeons plays in our band and we rehearse in his garage. You know, just an outrageous thing. Apparently this character is always bragging that he plays with famous bands. You know, and he says, I play second base with X. And so it was really funny and silly, you know, and I don't know if you saw it, but it was one of those just weird, you know, great situations. Yeah, I'd never seen it before that, but it's really an outrageous show.
And, oh, yeah.
We kick him out of the band. I mean, we kick him out of the band, or I guess he quits too, because he realizes we just wanted to use, you know, we were using him for his rehearsal space. Anyway.
Wow. Okay. So, the clip is on YouTube. So that's and I happened to stumble upon that. When researching, so I totally forgot that happened, because I've watched the show before. You worked also with Joe Strummer for with the show South Park. What did you work on, and what was it like working with Joe Strummer?
We didn't work that much. I mean, it was one song, and what it was for South Park. It was called. I can't think of the name of the song, but you know, they were doing it for the South Park show. And, you know, I mean, David Strummer, we went on, we kind of worked on the song. We go, how do we want to do it? And they had Ben Montench playing keyboards and Flea but a famous cast. And I'm in there going, okay, I had better play this well. I remember, you know, Joe had some influence on it, but he a lot of the times he was waiting to put his vocal. It was cool. He went back, it was a studio in Hollywood, and he set up a card table outdoors because he didn't want to sit in the studio all day, and him and his wife sat in the alleyway, you know, just hanging out, and I didn't talk to him that much, you know, but he was not, he really nice, you know, and it was just, you know, just really personable. So I mean, it was just a surreal experience because it went pretty quickly, you know. It wasn't like we were hanging out all day and all night or for a week. It was just going to the studio, you know, set up the drums and go, okay, what are we going to do? How does the song go? You know, and it's really intense, and you're trying to figure out, okay, what to play. So yeah, I don't have any great stories about Joe Strummer. I wish I did.
Well, it's cool that you got to work with him at least for that one song, and for South Park of all shows too.
Yeah, it was really good. I wish I could remember the song. I can't because I don't have a copy of it, and it may come to me eventually. But I hear that they're going to release that on a record, kind of an oddities album. You know, things that normally weren't released by by him. I just got a note from either their record company or lawyer or something saying, you're going to be on this record, you know, we don't owe you anything, but, you know, heads up. That's all I know. You know, vague information about that.
Wow. Also, can you tell me about your involvement with the Germs?
Well, there wasn't much. I recorded a couple songs with them. So they were, you know, I knew them from hanging around the scene. I'd seen them a few times. They were, you know, they're always looking for drummers. And for a while, Nikki Beat was playing drums with them. He was a drummer for the Weirdos. And in fact, I remember one time Darby said, "Hey, you want to play a live gig with me?" You know, and
really?
I said, "Okay, yeah." And he said, "Well," I said, "Well, when is it?" And we were at the Starwood, which was in L.A., you know, in Hollywood. And he goes, "Yeah, we're going to rehearse tomorrow at noon. If you want to come to, Santa Monica," I think it was Santa Monica or Venice. It might have been Venice, and you know, which is like 15 miles away by the beach. And it's like, "Yeah, come by and we'll practice." So I go, "Okay." And, you know, it was before cell phones, or I don't even think I had his number. He said, "Show up." So I didn't have a car at the time. So I walked to the beach after the show, it took about 3 or 4 hours, slept on the beach, walked to the rehearsal place. And then when I showed up, they go, "Oh, we didn't think you'd make it. We hired someone else." So I had, that was one story. And the other one was, Chris Ashford had a record company called What Records, and he put out a record with my band, The Eyes. We were, in fact, there were three bands on it, but we were one of the bands. And so he had this studio that was like a 4-track studio, kind of a cheap studio, and the Germs were ready to do another single. And Chris said, "Hey, do you want to come in and play drums?" And so I went in and with the Germs, and I recorded two songs. We played Round and Round, and it was funny because I don't know if he thought it was a David Bowie song or not, because he was on one of the David Bowie cover records. And I go, "Oh, I know that one. I knew it was Chuck Berry." So I played that, and they did another second version of Forming. I think their first record was Forming, and Darby was funny. You know, he knew me, but he would go, "Hey," you know, he was always droll, and he would go, "So, you know, why do you play punk rock? You know, you really know how to play drums. You should play in a band like..." "Why don't you play in a band like Yes?" I said, "Because I don't really like playing. You know, I don't want to be in Yes." I don't think I was that good to play in Yes, but, you know, so yeah, it was like a 2 or 3 hour session. You know, I mean, so that was the other Germs thing. And we used to play shows together. They used to open for us, and they would always break things. There were a bunch of things happened. They almost destroyed one place, Hope Street Hall. They pulled, it was a secondary stage that pulled out. It was like, I don't know. I can't even explain why it is, but they have these stages that have, you know, they have a second tier. And they, you know, of course, during the show, they pulled the whole thing out. What's the guitar player's name? I think it's George. I'm having a brain fart. he comes back and says, "Hey, can I?" Or I think one of the roadies said, "Yeah, we broke our guitar. Can we borrow Billy Zoom's guitar?" It's like, "No, I don't think so." Like, or I think broke it in half. So that's the Germs.
That's insane. That is insane. Punk News is a sponsor of Punk Rock Bowling 2018, which X will be playing. And I'll be there. And since that's sort of happening, I was wondering, what is your favorite game to play when you're in Vegas? Are you a slots man, blackjack, poker? What's your game when you're in Vegas?
Oh, you know, I don't gamble that much, I have to say, but I used to like the slot machines. Okay, you know, this dates me, you know, I mean, it's not that old, but I used to like the nickel machines, mm-hmm. and I liked it when you actually had coins, because I'm a tactile person. I like to feel things, you know, like you put the coin in, you win $10 and you feel like you're really rich, you know. And the only time I get that feeling now is when I get my change at Ralph's, when they, you know, it comes out of the change machine. I hear that and say, oh, I'm in Vegas. But, you know, I never really played the other games. Maybe like a blackjack machine. I don't think I've ever done that, sat down at a table. Exine loves to gamble. She would go to those tables and, you know, hold court and, you know, stay there until she made some money. I don't know if she's done it recently, but she used to really like that. But yeah, I'm just like, I'm useless. You know, I rarely gamble. I only bowl about every 5 years. Mm-hmm. but I do play music a lot.
Well, that's what counts. DJ, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I just have one question left for you. If do you have anything else you'd like to add to what we've gone through?
No, I've talked way too much and said too little. So, that's all. That's all. Thank you for putting up with me. And I can't wait. I can't wait to play punk rock bowling. I've only played it once. Mm-hmm. I played with the Devil's Brigade about 4 years ago. It was really fun, but I didn't get to see a lot because we were, you know, we got there late and we had to leave. And, you know, I ended up just going to my hotel room and having a beer. But so I didn't bowl. I didn't really do anything that fun. I just did my job. I think it's more of a common thing with musicians than you think. Like you go, well, it must have been really fun, you know, and everyone else is out there partying. You're going, well, no, I warmed up my instrument, and I set up the drums, and then I played, and then I was cold, so I had to change my clothes, and then the van was going back to the hotel, so and there wasn't much on TV, so I read a book. So that's my synopsis of a musician, the life of a musician. You guys must have written a lot of fun on the road. This book's pretty good.
All right, DJ. Well, again, thanks so much for doing this. Why don't you choose a song for us to play to take us out here from the X catalog?
Okay, how about Nausea?
All right, here's Nausea by X.